tickets today at crossandlight.com or 734-788-7073.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Good Fight with Barbara McWiggin. Please no phone calls at this time.
Welcome back to The Good Fight on EWTN Radio with Barbara McWiggin. Phone lines are open at 1-877-573-7825. That's 1-877-573-7825. Here again is Barbara McWiggin.
Welcome back to round two of The Good Fight. The fight is on, and we'll continue our interview of future Saint Robert R. Riley, author of the Ignatius Press release, Making Gay Okay, How Rationalizing Homosexual Behavior is Changing Everything. Robert, I'd like to go back a bit because this concept was a new one for me. You wrote about the transvaluation of values necessitates more than the denial of objective morality. It requires that the negation, the transvaluation, becomes the new religion. Because I'd like you to explain the transvaluation of values, because it leads to a complete inversion of justice, and that's what we're witnessing right now. Yes?
Yes, of course it is. And this term is from Nietzsche. I use it in the book in describing Obama's journey from his view that marriage was between a man and a woman to right. his view now that it's not. And this pertains to the quote you used at the top of the show from the former counsel for Lambda Defense Fund mm-hmm. about a new reality, a change in reality. In other words, in terms of the sexual revolution, you don't stop simply at saying, now you can do whatever you want. It goes beyond that because homosexuals have been able to do whatever they want for quite some considerable period of time. Why wasn't that enough? It wasn't enough because the rationalization wasn't complete until they could make a positive good mm-hmm. out of the act of sodomy, and that's why it must be the foundation for a sacrament. It has to be sacramentalized in marriage so that the inversion now is complete. That the act that is against marriage, the act that is against chastity, now be made the foundation of these things. So okay. that's what I mean by the inversion of values, or what Nietzsche called the transvaluation of values. It's the way Obama uses Christianity to advance homosexual marriage, yes. when it unambiguously has stood for 2,000 years yeah. Against sodomy as one evil form of sexual misbehavior. So everything becomes its opposite.
And that's like down is up and up is down. Black is white, white is black.
Yes.
So you don't even have to have a mind. It's like you just randomly go about choosing actions that can be fraught with consequences, and it doesn't matter. I mean,
well, it's not random. It's methodical.
It works its way through society in
a very methodical way,
sure.
which is how we've seen it work its way through all the institutions of American society, whether it's the Boy Scouts, whether it's education, whether it's the field of psychiatry and science, whether it's sociology, and through the institutions of government to the U.S. military. Now we're at the state in our society that the church is the last man standing. Everyone else has been brought into conformity with the rationalization. I served in the U.S. government for about 25 years, mm-hmm. on and off in various capacities, and I can tell you that you may not now serve in a senior role in the U.S. government, certainly not at a cabinet level, without endorsing the rationalization, without your proclamation to your government agency in celebration of Gay Pride Day, Gay Pride Month.
Yep. Right.
And if you may have seen in June, the gay pride flag flying over our U.S. embassies.
No, I didn't. I'm not aware of that. Wow.
Yeah, my wife is Spanish, so when I saw in the El Mundo newspaper the photograph of the gay pride flag flying under the U.S. flag at our U.S. embassy in Madrid, I then found out that, of course, they did this at a number of embassies. And this is now part of American foreign policy. And that makes sense in that the universalization of the rationalization isn't just in the United States. We have to export it. And that is why we're using our foreign policy to do that now. I think it was last week or so, the U.S. ambassador to some multilateral organization in Vienna, quote-unquote, got married to his male partner on embassy grounds, even in a country which does not acknowledge same-sex marriage. So this is the city, the light from the shining city on the hill is now casting some very dark shadows.
Boy, that is so true. You know, we have a caller right now. Robert, would you like to take a caller?
Of course.
Okay, great. Stephen from Iowa, welcome to The Good Fight.
Hi, thank you. I just lost your station, too, so this is timely for me.
Okay, you're kind of breaking up, but if you can ask your question, good man.
Yeah, I'm on the road, so before I lose contact with you guys, I was hoping that you could address what role, if any, you think contraception has played in helping to promote homosexuality and the breakdown of the family.
Oh, that was the whole beginning of the first hour, Stephen, but that's okay. It's a legitimate question. Robert, you want to just answer that question for Stephen?
Yeah, it's as Barbara and I were saying, Stephen, it has an inherent logic in it, which has more or less led inevitably to the embrace of to the approval of sodomy and the embrace of homosexual marriage. And, of course, it's been terribly destructive within families as well. I saw a figure the other week that there is almost no divorce between couples who do not use contraceptives.
Yep, that's right.
So yep. You're eroding, if you're willing to, you're short-circuiting not simply the procreative essence of sexual relations between spouses, you're really short-circuiting the unitive aspect of it as well, because the self-giving is not there.
Right.
So undoubtedly, the psychology, which is based upon the biology of these relations, has that corrosive effect through contraception.
Absolutely. Stephen, thank you so much for listening to The Good Fight, good man, and I hope to hear from you again one day.
All right, thank you. Bye.
God bless you. Let me give that number out again, the toll-free number to call in case you have a question or comment for Robert or myself, 1-877-573-7825 is the number that you can call. Let's talk about the most misleading statements that are being made today, either in support of same-sex marriage or in opposition to those who uphold marriage as a lifelong union of a man and woman. How can these statements be countered, Robert? I think that's important for all of us, because we're called homophobes. We know we're in that certain class right now. If you defend marriage, you're a homophobe. How do we respond?
Well, I think starting with that very one, Barbara, we would say that people who are ruled by their passions, and in this case, they believe their passion is love, can only conceive of opposition to their passion as coming from another passion, which in fact then must be hate. Therefore, the accusation of homophobe, or that anyone who opposes homosexual marriage is a hater. And obviously my book is an attempt to try to explain, this position is not the product of a passion, but of reason. There are reasonable objections against this. In fact, sodomy is not reasonable, and therefore it cannot serve as the foundation for marriage. So that's number one. Don't be ruled by your passions, but by reason, because you are by nature a rational animal, and we are so ordered as to rule ourselves by reason.
Mm-hmm.
The other point is we touched upon when the courts have repeatedly said that there is no rational objection to homosexual marriage other than prejudice, when in fact we've already gone over what the rational objection to that is, that sexual relations are by their nature unitive and procreative.
Right.
And that therefore the proper use of those powers is spousal. And therefore if the sexual act by its nature can neither be unitive, because the pieces don't fit when it's a homosexual couple,
yes,
or procreative, and it can't be procreative unless it's unitive, then that's a misuse of those sexual powers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's according to the nature of things that we can know that these are wrong, and why throughout history, and not simply Western history, for millennia, marriage has been understood exclusively as between a man and a woman. And even in societies where there was some partial acceptance of homosexual behavior in certain instances, it never occurred to anyone in ancient Greece or anywhere else to say this would be the foundation of marriage, for the reasons I just pointed out.
Yes.
The other point is that this is somehow discriminatory. It's like saying that laws against drunk driving are discriminatory,
yeah,
against alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we would, it's a law against drunk driving for the purposes of public safety.
Sure.
Is not based upon race, creed, or color. You can't be stopped and arrested because you're Chinese or because you're a woman. You can only be stopped and arrested if you're drunk driving.
Mm-hmm.
So it's focused on the nature of an act, not on who the person is. And if you have a disposition to drink too much, the law is not discriminatory in that respect, nor do you need to have a separate law for alcoholics so that they can drive drunk. Analogously, what's being proposed today is that we need special laws for this special kind of so-called marriage because these people, for whatever reason, are disposed homosexually rather than heterosexually. It's again like saying there are requirements in the fire department that the recruit must be able to lift a 50-pound hose. Now, does everyone have the right to be a fireman?
No.
Well, they can't be discriminated against according to creed or color or race, but if they can't lift the 50-pound hose, they can't be a fireman.
Right.
And should you then create a special fire department of people who don't have the physical capacity to serve?
Mm-hmm.
And would you then send them to put out a fire?
Yes.
That wouldn't be very much fair to the people whose house is on fire when you have a pseudo or a false fireman rather than a real one.
Yeah.
Likewise, there are the requirements of marriage throughout history have been between a man and a woman, and the marriage in common law is said to only exist once the marriage is consummated. And if the marriage isn't consummated, it can be declared a nullity. Consummation has always meant the marital act, coition between a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How possibly can a homosexual liaison be consummated? Physically, it's impossible.
Right.
There is no discrimination in the law of marriage because there's no race, creed, or color that can be employed to keep you from marrying. All you have to do is comply with the requirements of marriage, which, as we've said in common law and a great many civil laws, is an act of coercion between a man and a woman in consummation. And if you're incapable or unwilling to perform that act your marriage can be declared a nullity. And since that act is impossible for homosexual couples, they can't, properly speaking, be said to get married. How are those, for starters?
I think those are great starters, but when you see all the consequences of even some of those concepts, when you consider the children, the innocence of the children, because they can't procreate, now they turn to IVF, to surrogacy, to adopting innocent children. I mean, you have a whole chapter in your book, Same-Sex Parenting, that just absolutely devastates me when I read this. And I just think that people need to read what you have written, because as we have said, as you have so eloquently put, Robert, it's not based on scripture, although, you know, you could have added some of that if you wanted to, but this is strictly based on reason and natural law. And I think that it will wake people up to see what the consequences are when you completely try to throw out nature and nature's God. I mean, it's just so obvious.
Well,
and
go
ahead.
Yeah, in respect to children, Barbara, I think you could see this is an enormous act of injustice to the children to deny the child both parents by design. In other words, to make a family by breaking a family,
yeah,
or breaking a family to make a family, is inherently unjust to those children.
Good
and
point.
It shows that there is no length to which the rationalization will not go to establish itself, that it insists on enfolding these children in this way and denying them at least one of the child's parents. If all loves it, what about parental love? This is exactly a denial of parental love,
mm-hmm,
by excluding one of the parents.
Right.
In the breeding program or however it is done, and leaving that child with the lifelong quest of where was my mom, or where is my mom, or where,
yeah,
was my dad,
mm-hmm,
and why didn't they want me? You know, my children, when they were very young, came up with an idea which neither my wife nor I ever told them. And they expressed it this way: Mom and Dad, we thought that if you ever took off your wedding rings, we would disappear.
Oh.
So what they...
That's
pick
in
that
your
book.
Yeah, pick it up when we come back. It's a great story. You are listening to The Good Fight on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, produced by Ave Maria Radio, brought to you by VoiceOfVirtue.org. I'm Barbara McWiggin. We're going to come back and talk to Gordon and Nick and Ryan, I promise. We'll be right back.
There was no single event. It was more gradual. You know, eventually you just don't go one Sunday, and then you don't go two Sundays in a row. Then went through a divorce and ended up being a single parent. If I didn't have church or God, I would be back at that lonely stage, that trouble stage. Whenever you get anxious and worry about things, you just know that Jesus has it under control.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Are you concerned about the way our nation and our world are heading? Are you looking for the truth behind the issues of the day? Do you need support in standing up for life, the family, and our Catholic faith? Then join well-informed Catholics worldwide who depend on the National Catholic Register to address the most compelling questions of our time. Now part of the EWTN family of services, the Register is a trusted source of news and views with an unwavering fidelity to the Pope and the Magisterium. Get the in-depth analysis you need explaining what happened and why it matters for Catholics who engage in a culture to serve Christ. To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner, or call 800-854-6316.
This month, the EWTN home video highlight is the 2014 EWTN Family Celebration, The Joy of the Gospel. Inspiring and passionate presentations by Father Robert Barron, Joanna Bogle, Father Timothy Gallagher, and Father Larry Richards will move you to laugh, cry, and go out and spread the good news. Get your DVD set through the EWTN Religious Catalog website, EWTNReligiousCatalog.com, or you can call 1-800-854-6316.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Good Fight with Barbara McWiggin. Please no phone calls at this time.
This is The Good Fight with Barbara McWiggin on EWTN Radio. If you'd like to join the discussion, call 1-877-573-7825. That's 1-877-573-7825. Here again is Barbara McWiggin.
Welcome back to the last two segments of The Good Fight. And, you know, Robert, what really, I was so happy to see, and I was shocked at the same time to see it, because how so many of the medical profession has gone against or bought into the whole liberal mentality. But you quote, because we're talking about same-sex parenting, and you quote the American College of Pediatricians and how they summarize the risk to children from same-sex parents. And this is right. Do you have this in front of you, Robert? Page 149. Because I think it was written originally in 2004, but then it was revised in March of 2013, which I was very happy to see. It begins with research has demonstrated.
Yes. Right.
Okay. Can you go there? Can you talk about that? Because I was stunned to see that they are really on the side of the kids completely.
Yeah. Let me just, if I can finish my thought before the break.
Sorry.
When my children said that they thought they would disappear if we took off our wedding rings.
Yes.
What they instinctively sensed was that they are the incarnation of the love between my wife and me.
Ah, yes.
And that if that love were broken,
right,
the incarnation of it would disappear. That's what they sensed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that I think every child, in a way, senses that, which is why their lives are devastated by divorce. But to think of how bad it is for the children for whom one of those parents is never there.
Right.
And what kinds of questions that raises in their life when they break out of the rationalization that they've been raised under by the homosexual or lesbian parents. I'm going to recommend to your audience, Barbara,
okay,
Robert Oscar Lopez, who is a very powerful writer who was raised by lesbians,
right,
who speaks so eloquently from experience what this is like and what you lose as a consequence of it. So anyone can Google Robert Oscar Lopez and find some of his very powerful writing on this subject. Now, if you, by the, can I mention one other thing in case we forget to get back to the arguments against and for homosexual marriage?
Of course.
One of the statements that are made is that, how could this, what difference does it make? How could it, you know, it's not going to change marriage for heterosexuals. So why should they care?
Mm-hmm.
The answer to this popular argument is, why should you care if someone injects counterfeit currency into the money supply?
Ah, good point.
So if, you know, if you can't tell the difference between the counterfeit and the real money, what happens is you'll start using the counterfeit money, and the value of all your currency will diminish.
Sure.
It will be devalued because of the counterfeit. And the same effect will be there for marriage once we accept the counterfeit definition of marriage. And the other thing to focus on here is, if marriage can be between two men and two women, well, which two men and which two women? In other words, what is it about their relationship that gives them the privilege of calling it a marriage?
Yeah.
And it turns out it's homosexual acts.
Yeah.
Between two men, it then is the act of sodomy, which is privileged, because no one is suggesting that two chaste men can get married,
right,
or two chaste women, or that an uncle and his nephew can get married.
Right.
So this precisely, when we were talking about the inversion of values, this is exactly the example. It is privileging homosexual behavior by sanctifying it in matrimony. But I'm sorry, Barbara, you wanted me to go to the American College of Pediatricians here.
Well, if you will, and your points are so great, and I'm sorry that I forgot all about your story during the break. I apologize.
No, that's okay. I can read from their summary here that research has demonstrated considerable risks to children exposed to the homosexual lifestyle. Violence between same-sex partners is 2 to 3 times more common than among married heterosexual couples. Same-sex partnerships are significantly more prone to dissolution than heterosexual marriages, with the average homosexual relationship lasting only 2 to 3 years. Homosexual men and women are reported to be promiscuous with serial partners, even within what are loosely termed committed relationships. Individuals who practice a homosexual lifestyle are more likely than heterosexuals to experience mental illness, substance abuse, suicidal tendencies, and shortened lifespans. That's part of it. You know, if I could comment on a couple of these things.
Yes.
When you say all loves are equal, the impulse of chastity in monogamous relationships is there because it is the person who is loved.
Right.
And the person is irreplaceable. There's not a substitute person for the person you love because it's that person
mm-hmm.
whom you love. Therefore, monogamy naturally accompanies real love, spousal love. And how is it that the typical homosexual relationship is so promiscuous?
Right.
Now, this is not homosexual researchers, sociologists. The literature on this subject is vast.
It is.
That promiscuity is endemic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the relationship, if the character of the love were spousal, the promiscuity would not be endemic. This is another little indication to us that this is a lie. And when we're talking about promiscuity, we're talking about scores of partners, hundreds of partners, and in some cases, thousands of partners. Now, another point that is very important to make is the one that was mentioned here about the brevity of the so-called homosexual partnerships.
Right.
When people are saying there is no evidence showing that children do any worse under homosexual so-called parents than heterosexual, there is no science behind that for the simple reason that those households do not stay together long enough
to
have a reliable base sample.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you're looking at is the lifespan of a child over 15, 20 years. And it is the rare exception to the rule that any kind of same-sex couple can remain together for that period of time. So you're comparing apples and oranges instead of apples and apples. You'd need an intact monogamous household that lasted as long as the heterosexual households do to make that comparison. But what we already know from the science is that children from broken families don't do as well as children from intact monogamous families.
Mm-hmm.
And so it should be no surprise when it comes to homosexual couples who are notoriously promiscuous and who do not stay together that the children do worse under that circumstance.
Yes. Well, it's amazing, and I'm thrilled to know that the American College of Pediatricians steps up and believes, and this is in what you were reading, it is inappropriate, potentially hazardous to children, and dangerously irresponsible to change the age-old prohibition on same-sex parenting, whether by adoption, foster care, or reproductive manipulation. This position is rooted in the best available science, and this was just updated in March of 2013. So I was happy to have that, Robert, because
yes.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that they stepped up on this. We've got callers waiting patiently, so we'll take a few calls. Is that okay?
Of course.
All right, good. Let's go to Nick from Nevada. Nick, welcome to The Good Fight, good man. Thanks for waiting.
That's okay. I'm a listener and financial supporter of Mac at Heart Radio, and
praise
I agree
God.
Wholeheartedly with everything you're saying. You even enlightened me on some of the more outrageous goings-on. But it distresses me that the majority of Catholics voted for the very regime that's promulgating this and furthering this problem. And I'm especially distressed and have been fighting against this, but nobody wants to agree or answer me that the United States Council of Catholic Bishops, in conjunction with the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, donated millions of dollars to the Obama campaign. Now, some people at Mac Heart Radio asked me to prove it, but I've written to the United States Council of Catholic Bishops and the Catholic Campaign for Human Development asking him the question, and they don't answer it. So to me, if someone asks you a question that you have you committed this grievous wrong and you don't answer it, it doesn't presume that you are guilty, but...
Okay. Excuse me one second, though. So the bottom line, I think, that what you're trying to say is, what are we going to do about this? How can we refute the people who are making the laws that we make us all
right
so
within
upset,
the Catholic
right?
Church, right within the Catholic, right within our own church.
Okay.
We're not fighting.
May I respond to you, because I think you've touched upon an important thing. Cardinal Dolan in New York a year ago or so made this devastating remark. He said the Catholic Church got laryngitis in respect to contraception.
Yep.
And
sure did.
I think we see there one of the sources of the problem, that the Church did not effectively and consistently teach. And Barbara began the show by mentioning Paul VI and... soon to be, we hope, St. Paul the Sixth for his great encyclical on this issue, Humanae Vitae, which if the Church had consistently taught, I don't think we would be in the same situation as we are today, with the acceptance of this, that is, of homosexual marriage, being so broad, because the popular culture now has mau-mau'd everyone, silenced almost everyone. We can be grateful that the Church is the one remaining institution which has not acceded to this rationalization. So this fight is not over. And I think our obligation in the face of this is the same as would be someone's obligation if this were 1860 and the issue were slavery, or were this 1935 and the issue were the Nuremberg Laws declaring Jews inferior, is refuse to comply and to insist on the truth, because our own souls are at stake in this. And I will tell you something. Our bishop here, I'm in Northern Virginia, our bishop, Luverde, put out a letter when the issue arose on compliance with Obamacare and the support for abortifacients and so forth, that he simply said, we cannot and we will not comply. So there was a Thomas More moment from one of the American bishops who, as have many others, bravely spoken up about this. And they're going to have to do more, as we will, because this is going to get worse before it gets better.
I totally agree with you. Thank you so much, Nick.
What can we do to keep it?
Sorry, you broke up. Okay, I guess we better move on from here. Let's go to Gordon from Maryland. Gordon, welcome to The Good Fight.
Hey, well, thank you. I wanted to say thanks to Robert for being so knowledgeable on the subject. I've listened in patiently, and it's been very enlightening to me to hear all these new positions on the issue, because I think so many times we have a kind of a one-sided story in the media on the homosexual issue.
Yes.
again, I want to thank you for being on the show and you know, and enlighten us on that.
Thank you.
The question I've kind of got for you is that, you know, I'm a Christian. I'm not a Catholic, so please don't hold it against me. But I'm a Christian. I'm a straight man. I'm a heterosexual. You know, I like ladies. You know, I mean, I'm not married now, but I do like women. But anyway, I guess the question I would have for you is, can we blame Congress for doing what it does, and can we blame the Supreme Court for what it does in regards to this when they are so often beat over the head about religion and getting religion out of politics? Can we blame the Congress for doing stuff that is basically void of religion? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, Congress did pass the Family Protection Act that the Supreme Court overturned in the Windsor case a little over a year ago. So as far as Congress is concerned regarding marriage between a man and a woman, Congress did the right thing. It is, as did many states in amending their state constitutions to define marriage between a man and a woman. This has been overthrown by the courts, which is leading the charge on this issue, along with the popular media. So the rationalization first captured the culture through the media, and then our legal institutions, and so it continues to eat its way through in this manner. I don't know if that answer helps.
I think it's a good answer, Gordon, and I appreciate you calling the show, good man. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your kind words.
Yes, absolutely. Let's go to Ryan, waiting patiently in New York. We'll come to him after the break. Ryan, hold on there, good man. You are listening to The Good Fight on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, produced by Ave Maria Radio, brought to you by VoiceOfVirtue.org. I'm Barbara McWiggin here with Robert Riley. We'll be right back for our last segment.
We're here with Bert Gezzi, author of Voices of the Saints. Bert, you know, many saints have the name of Thomas, and one that our listeners may not be too familiar with is St. Thomas of Villanova, whose feast day we celebrate on September 22nd.
A delightful bishop of Valencia, Spain, mid-16th century. He was the leader of the Catholic Reformation in Spain after the Council of Trent. He mainly implemented the decrees of that council that brought the Reformation into the church in the 16th century. He was an Augustinian monk, and when he became archbishop, he simply decided to live as simply as he possibly could, and the canons of the cathedral didn't like that. They gave him a lot of money, 4,000 gold pieces to furnish his place, and he said, I don't need a fancy place to live, I'm just a simple monk. He didn't like his shabby clothes, and they gave him a fancy hat to wear, and he used to say, well, you know, my dignity doesn't depend upon my clothes, but here, he used to wave the hat saying, here it is, my episcopal dignity. He was very close to the people. When people came to the door, he was to be interrupted at whatever he was doing so he could tend to his flock. He fed hundreds of people every day, gave them a meal and a glass of wine. He gave special care to his priests, helping many of them overcome difficulties in their life. He especially urged people to pay direct attention to the poor. Here's what he said. If you want God to hear your prayers, hear the voice of the poor. If you wish God to anticipate your wants, provide those of the indigent without waiting for them to ask you. Especially anticipate the needs of those who are ashamed to beg. To make them ask for alms is to make them buy it. That's his life message, really. We should live out Christ's teaching in our life by serving those around us generously, by paying attention to the folks who come into our life. By doing that, we're doing what Christ did.
Great words to live by from St. Thomas of Villanova, whose feast day we celebrate on September 22nd. And that's Bert Gezzi, author of Voices of the Saints.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Good Fight with Barbara McWiggin. Please no phone calls at this time.
This is The Good Fight with Barbara McWiggin on EWTN Radio. If you'd like to join the discussion, call 1-877-573-7825. That's 1-877-573-7825. Here again is Barbara McWiggin.
Welcome back to the very last segment. Robert, did this go by quickly for you?
Oh, indeed. It's short.
Oh, God love you. Thanks for saying that. Okay, we'll go to Ryan from New York, as I promised. Ryan, thanks for waiting.
Sure. First, I'd just like to say reading your book, Mr. Riley, was like taking a cold draft of water. It was very reasonably presented, and the language is very very clear, and it was a joy to read. But
thank you.
Just wanted to say, when presenting this argument, I try to give a couple of points. I just wanted to say if you believe they're viable, just to bring out the difference between the two relationships, true marriage and then homosexual so-called marriage. The first is, I think both people on either side of the argument would agree that a brother and sister shouldn't marry, and that's probably because of the inherent risk to the children. But if, by that argument, why can't two brothers marry? The second position is, what good could possibly come from arranged homosexual marriage, whereas throughout history we've seen it that much good and unity between two families might come about through arranged marriage. What good could come of it if it were between two homosexuals, which I see could serve no purpose. So I just wanted to see if Mr. Riley would give his opinion on those two positions.
I think those are very novel and very interesting, provocative points to make. I think that's extremely good. Yeah. I wish I had thought of them. Of course, no good can come from a homosexual arranged marriage because no good could come from a homosexual marriage. Your other point on consanguinity is excellent. Yeah, why couldn't two brothers do that? The answer is there isn't a reason. Once you remove nature as the standard by which you can judge the proper use and abuse of things, and that's what, of course, this rationalization for homosexual behavior has done. It seems so long as you are willing and able to engage in homosexual acts, there is no obstacle to you're sanctifying that relationship. In fact, it makes performing those acts the grounds for the sanctification. That's how inverse the morality is. But I think your points are very good, and they're very good because they show the absurdity of the fundamental positions.
Thank you so much, Ryan, for waiting patiently and for listening to The Good Fight. God bless you. Okay, let's go to Joe. Joe is not saying where he's from. Joe, welcome to The Good Fight.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Barbara and Robert, I live in Summit, New York.
Okay, great. And you're an ordained evangelical minister, I see here.
Oh, 1977, and I have been living in the heartache of the questions that you are asking, trying to find a way to communicate. And so when I picked up my volume, Robert, of the politics, and I began to study through the politics, I said, wow, this is an education. I want to say that thank you. The words on your on your program today is more than just a good program. This is a manifesto. And I'm going to buy that book. And I'm going to study that book and teach that book word
Praise
for word
God.
Because your way and the homework that you did to speak succinctly on this is incredible. Well, the question is... go ahead.
No, thank you so much.
Go ahead, Joe. You have a question for him? Hey, Joe. Oops.
Oh, I hope we didn't lose him.
I know. Did we lose him? I hope, Kai, did we lose Joe? Well, maybe he'll call back because I would like to hear his question. Okay, Joe, are you there? Okay, let's go to Jackie in Dallas. Jackie, welcome to The Good Fight. Hello, Jackie.
Program so much.
Oh, praise God. We didn't hear you at first, but we're happy to have you with us. Do you have a question for Robert
Riley?
Well,
I'm calling because there was so much static on the radio when you reached certain subjects, when you got into the sodomy and explicit things, there was a lot of static. And it cleared up a little bit after a lady sang for a few minutes.
Oh, for
and,
me,
I forgot what her song was about, but it was about God. And then the static started again whenever you got into the sodomy. So I think there's somebody has a little vandalism there, or someone who didn't want that particular reply to be heard by people.
Okay.
I really believe there's a little vandalism that occurred there. And you might want to check into that, because I've had that happen on certain programs I was listening to before, whether it be politics or religion, when they got into subjects that are really predominant now and that we're really interested in, that's when the static would occur.
Thank
you. Well, that's happened, not just on your program, on your station,
yes,
but on some of the political.
Well, we'll have to take a look into that, but, you know, we do have some spiritual warfare going on at all times on the radio and EWTN-TV, so,
I'm enjoying this, and this gentleman is so knowledgeable, and I want to read his book. I just wish more medical people would come out and talk about the damage to the colon and the rectal area and anus and things like that, you know.
Well,
how
if I could just if I could just simply mention, thank you for making that point, and it needs to be emphasized. And the Center for Disease Control, for instance, which keeps the definitive statistics on this, has shown that what they say MSM, men having sex with men, account for around 2% of the male population age 13 and older, they account for more than 50% of all new HIV infections. And in 2010, they accounted for 61% of the HIV diagnoses. So there you've got fewer than 2% of the population accounting for a majority of the spread of this virus. And the other thing is, of course, the resuscitation in the spread of syphilis, which had almost been eliminated. There's now a resurgence in syphilis, and it is almost exclusively due to male sex with males. So the point you make is a very good one.
Yes. Jackie, thank you so much for listening, and hopefully we can just pray this whole... away, what's going on the air. I just don't know what that's all about. But thank you for listening, dear lady. God bless you. Let's go next to Steve from California. Steve, welcome to The Good Fight.
Hi, thank you very much for having me on.
Sure.
I wanted to, at least at the end of my comment, sort of reiterate the caller who wanted to know what Catholics could do in regard to their bishops seem me to be going the wrong way. But my comment is that sort of the tip-off for me was when they started speaking about sexual orientation. And I think it was after the turn of this century here, somewhere after 2000, I started seeing it, this everywhere. And remembering my studies in psychology, the various psychoses, one of them was sexual orientation. Something to be avoided because it led to homosexuality, pedophilia, et cetera, et cetera. And so when, I was just sort of surprised that no one else came to the conclusion that there's something wrong here, that, if I were to be asked, what's your sexual orientation, I'd vehemently reply, I certainly have no sexual orientation. I'm work-oriented or family-oriented, leisure-oriented. But to be sexually oriented is obviously a negative, isn't it? You see everything through sexual perspective. And when you express yourself, well, I'm a homosexual. I mean,
your identity is your sexual identity defines you. Robert?
Everything
well, it's making, it's,
yeah.
It's, yeah, that's a very good point. Of course, the word homosexual didn't exist until the late 19th century, and it was created by a German who was trying to rationalize homosexual behavior. It's making a disorder in identity. It's like saying I'm a dipsomaniac or I'm a kleptomaniac. Except in this case, it's refusing to recognize that the disorder is a disorder. What's behind, I think, this orientation language is the idea that we construct that our gender is a social construction rather than something that exists by nature. And that, of course, is part of the fallacy behind this thing. On the other hand, we have to acknowledge that homosexual inclinations often exist through no fault of the person who experiences them.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the way that certain alcoholics seem to have a disposition to alcoholism that may have genetic factors involved. Now, the disposition in no way, therefore, justifies getting drunk any more than a homosexual inclination justifies the act of sodomy. But it does call for a certain amount of compassion and the acknowledgement that that may not be the fault of the person. It could be the product of childhood trauma. It could be the product, as it often is, of childhood sexual abuse. But as in the case of alcoholism, the last thing you would want to do, if this is a person whom you love or care for, is to affirm them in their disorder and to say, let's start an alcoholic pride day. And I'll go down to the bar with you and we'll start tossing back some bourbon. You would be leading that person further along on the path of their self-destruction, which would hardly be an act of compassion. Wouldn't the person who loved the alcoholic say, have you heard about this organization, Alcoholics Anonymous? Let's go together and see if we can get you turned around. Otherwise, your behavior is going to destroy you. Wouldn't you, if you loved someone who had homosexual inclinations, to work with them in a similar way, affirm your affection for them and say, how about this organization called Courage, which has a program that can, even if you can't shake this inclination, it can help you live chastely. And we're all called to live chastely. It's not simply homosexuals. Heterosexuals who live alone are supposed to live chastely. You must live chastely within your marriage. So while this is a burden, it's not an undue burden, and I hugely admire the Courage organization. Of course, as you know, Barbara, Father Hardin had a great deal to do with Courage.
Absolutely, yes.
So the I always use this analogy with alcoholism so we can see how we're harming homosexuals through the embrace of this Gay Pride Day and the celebration of the disorder.
Yeah, so true. Steve, thank you so much for calling The Good Fight. We're going to have to close the show pretty quickly here. Honestly, this book, everyone needs to read this book. I don't know how else to put it. We got a lot of wonderful information with Robert today, but we just really touched the tip of the iceberg when I look at the book, and what he does talk about is sodomy and science, same-sex parenting, sodomy and education, the Boy Scouts, the military, sodomy and U.S. foreign policy. I mean, really, he has done so much research to put this book together, and it is really quite incredible. So, Robert, also, I want to say, where would be the best place to order this book? Ignatius Press, right?
You can go to the Ignatius Press website to buy it. You can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
And it should be in any number of bookstores, because Ignatius Press has pretty good distribution, but it should be very easy to buy online.
Yes, okay, that's perfect. And Robert, I just want to say a thousand thanks to you for your generosity today. Honestly, your knowledge, your perseverance, because you had to persevere to write this book, it would seem to me, and your charity. It's edifying for me, and I'm sure for all of us, because it is an act of love to speak the truth. Like Mother Angelica says, to tell a person what they want to hear is you love yourself when you tell them what they want to hear. To speak the truth to them, you love them. And
well,
so,
you know, Barbara, in the beginning of the book, I have quotes from a couple of people, but I think the most important one is from Edith Stein, who, of course, is a saint, who said, "Do not accept anything as love which lacks truth."
And so that's what I tried to do
in this book, is to tell the truth, and I hope that the rational arguments against this so-called homosexual marriage and for marriage between a man and a woman will be helpful and indeed a relief to people who see the reasonable case to be made on this. And Barbara, I can't thank you enough for taking all this time today and for giving me this opportunity.
Well, I'm so grateful that you said yes, and I want you to know that your work is life-altering, I believe. I think it's soul-saving. It is so important. So I want you to know that all of us at EWTN, at Ave Maria Radio, and all of our listeners are going to keep you in mind, heart, and prayer, because we beg God that He will continue to give you the grace to shed the much-needed light of truth on all this rationalization and denial that's taking place among so many souls today in our culture. So may God mightily bless you, Robert. Many thanks to my brilliant producers.
Thank you so much, Barbara.
Oh, thank you. To Kai and Kate and Iris. And until next week, let us together fight the good fight and run the race until we run right into the arms of God.